The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today we will begin to explore the May issue of Our State Magazine. The main theme for this issue is a state of grace and beauty, a state of beauty and grace. On the cover of the magazine, there's a sunset picture showing the marshes between Figure Eight Island and Hampstead, and the title is Gone Fishin'. And it's a very wide view, looking way out over the marshes with the amber color of the sunset glistening over the water, and two fishermen in a boat, both of them standing on platforms on the boat, one with a large pole, because I guess the water is very shallow and they don't want to run the motor, and the other one is actually fishing. First up in this episode is the welcome message, May is for Mothers, by the editor, Elizabeth. My parents' birthdays fell just 6 days apart. My dad's was May 1st. My mother's is May 7th. I don't remember extravagant birthday parties or lavish dinners in our household, aside from exchanging modest cards signed simply Love Phil or Love Susie. My parents were minimalist when it came to celebrating. My mother never asked for any traditional gifts, nothing like jewelry or perfume or clothing. As the most practical person I know, she favored useful items that served a purpose. And my dad accommodated her preferences, one year giving her a 36-pack flat of impatience for her flower beds. Another year, he surprised her with a set of Boston ferns, arranging them carefully on our front porch. My perception then was that my parents really weren't into gift-giving. But looking back, I can see they found ways to weave tokens of thoughtfulness into their daily routines, celebrating the gift of their shared life in ways that didn't require wrapping paper or ribbon. After my dad retired, and while my mom was still working, he took over the grocery shopping, packing her lunches, Oscar Mayer salami sandwiches on rye, a snack-sized bag of potato chips, even adding a toothpick that he carefully rolled in plastic wrap, and always two Oreo cookies for a little something sweet. They spent weekends working side by side in the yard, my dad mowing or hammering together a bird feeder he'd made for her, my mom weeding the hosta garden they'd spent decades building into the side of a sloping hill. After lunch, something simple, tuna sandwiches or ham and cheese, he'd serve the two of them bowls of ice cream, scooping butter pecan for her and chocolate for himself. Tiny gestures that added up to a contented life. After my dad died 9 years ago, I wanted to find a new way to honor my mom's birthday, so she and I started taking trips together each May, just the two of us, finding peace in the beauty of nature and in the comfort of uncomplicated meals. Our travels have taken us all over North Carolina, from Bear Island to collect sand dollars, to Blowing Rock to see the profusion of flowers, the ones planted into the side of the sloping hill on Main Street. We've watched the sunset over the Cape Fear River in Wilmington, and then driven over to Carolina Beach for donuts after supper. I remember a little something sweet. Last year we marked her birthday in Hendersonville, settling in at the Horseshoe Farm for a few nights. We brewed coffee in the farmhouse-style kitchen of our two-bedroom cottage, and in the mornings she and I rocked in the swing on the porch, breathing in the honeyed scent of sweet shrub blooming nearby. "Your daddy sure would have liked it here," my mom said. I can imagine how much the two of them would have appreciated the panorama of the Blue Ridge Mountains in the distance, the early morning fog lifting from freshly mown grass. I gave her my card, "Love, Elizabeth," and even though it was her birthday and not mine, I'm the one who closed my eyes and made a wish. Now I will take you on a descriptive journey through this month's pictorial essay, entitled Go Fish. It doesn't matter if you're on the deck of a boat or the boards of a pier, standing with your feet in the sand, or wearing waders in a mountain stream. For those who fish for fun or sport, there's nothing like that telltale tug. Whether you're casting a line from Jarrett Bay Boatworks, 64-foot builder's choice on the open ocean, or wading in Wilson Creek in Caldwell County, you're sure to have a great day with a rod in hand. The two pictures, of course, the Jarrett Bay Boatworks 64-foot builder's choice is shown, and it's a beautiful ocean blue hull with a black waterline, and of course a captain's perch up top. It's a nice boat, and with a sea. It's sort of, I don't know if it's sunrise or sunset. There's a little bit of a cloudy sky, but you're going through some white water there. And then the opposite page is someone in a serene, looks like, it's in Caldwell County on Wilson Creek. There's a wide spot in the creek there, and a gentleman is fly fishing, looks like, in that area. And the creek is coming out of a verdant green trees on either side of the water, and looks like some fog still in the foothills there showing up. Turning the page, the next article is called Freshwater. Let's begin on a farm pond, which is where many anglers get their start. A farm pond, say, or a small town lake. There's a bobber on the water, and ripples fan out in diminishing wavelets, leaving the red and white plastic sphere to float like a stopper holding two worlds apart, which is exactly what it does. And then, when that bobber does its thing and goes ba-ba-ba-bloop and disappears underwater, well, there's nothing quite like that feeling in the world. You can hear it in every little angler's squeal. I got one! I got one! From such a starting point, with a fish on a line in North Carolina, the possibilities for freshwater fishing are as endless as the landscape is varied. Say we launch a canoe or a kayak into a coastal plain river, a small one, like the Upper Tar River or the Little River near Goldsboro, or the Black River near above Wilmington. In those fertile waters, there's no telling what might eat a red wiggler, or chase down a rooster tail lure, or smack a popping bug fly, a red-breast sunfish on one cast, a Yarmouth on the next, chain pickerel, largemouth bass, crappie, bluegill, catfish. You never know. You could hook into a bowfin, a bone-headed, air-breathing, fanged fish that's been around since prehistoric times. A hot summer day. Cicadas in the trees. Let's back the boat into a sprawling Piedmont lake, perhaps one of the reservoirs that hold Father Yadkin's waters, where the ridge lines of the Uwaries lope along the horizon. In such open waters, the trick is to know where to start. Pan-sized crappie hang out around underwater humps and down trees. Big bass haunt the deep creek channels. Catfish prowl lakeside piers as the sun starts to sink. So many choices. That's the blessing and the curse of freshwater fishing. Unless you're angling for quiet environs and solitude, then you head uphill into the southern Appalachians, where the trout fishing is as easy or as challenging as you want it to make it. Let's go for the good stuff. A wild stream-bred brook trout, native to North Carolina and a dweller of the small waters, the headwaters, the pure flows from those ancient crags. The fish strikes the fly with an audible splash, water droplets scattering like a tiny burst of fireworks. And then it races away into the deepest, darkest clefts in the pool. Brook trout are not big fish. They don't have to be, because every catch can be the headliner in a big fish story. And the facing page shows an underwater view, and then above it, the above water view. And above the water, you see a small boat and two fishermen, one seated, one standing, and they're kind of blurred out. And the focus is on the underwater scene, and you have a rainbow trout. in the water that is just taking, you can see the line and the fly going into his mouth. It says, two worlds meet when a rainbow trout takes a dry fly in a pristine mountain stream. Who goes there? On Lake Glenville, the highest lake east of the Mississippi River, an angler casts into waters rippled by a mountain breeze. Here, near Cashiers in Jackson County, the quarry could be a largemouth or smallmouth bass, walleye or bluegill, or rainbow trout. The lakes of North Carolina's mountains are a meeting place for warm water and cold water fish. So even though an angler might have a good idea of what they'll reel in, there's always the chance of a surprise. And you have Lake Glenville showing. It's sort of the water is glinting off of the sunlight is glinting off of the water, and you've got a lone fisherman or fisherwoman in a small boat, and it looks like they're just casting out. And then looks like there may be some cloudy skies. It's a very nice picture. The lure of the fly. It's the ultimate deception. A bit of feather, a pinch of fur, a wrap of thread and tinsel, a lure as light as hope itself. In the North Carolina mountains, trout anglers bushwhack into tiny, high-elevation streams to fish dark pools where native brook trout have hung on since the last ice age. Or they stalk along tumbling rivers where every twist and turn conspires to make an angler lean the rod against a hemlock, take a seat on a mossy stone, and wonder, who is catching whom? It shows a couple of pictures here. Angler Mary Bradford and the Davidson River Outfitters guide Landon Lupke enjoy the peace and solitude of fly fishing in Transylvania County. And Mary Bradford is holding a rainbow trout, a beautiful rainbow trout, and it looks like she's probably going to release it back into the water. She's actually in the water. And then Landon Lipke is fly fishing at the bottom of a waterfall. It's a wide waterfall, shallow waterfall. The water's cascading over the rocks. There's a wide expanse of rocks coming down through the river at that point between the trees, and then dumping into a nice pool at the bottom where he's fishing. Saltwater. Hey, they're not all leviathans. The big fish get the big attention, and they deserve it. Marlin and sailfish with their exquisite bills, mahi-mahi lit up like a state fair carnival ride, tiger-striped wahoo. Everything about the quest for these big game blue water species is supersized. Big boats, brawny tackle, and long days on the water. Wrestling a 600-pound fish onto the boat is a feat that an angler will never forget. But not all saltwater fishing requires reels that can stop a train. North Carolina's inshore marshes and tidal creeks teem with many of angling's most sought species, redfish and speckled trout, croaker and flounder. The nearshore waters between the beach breakers and a few miles from shore hold Spanish mackerel and bluefish, false albacore and king mackerel. You need a boat, but not a big one. And North Carolina's charter fleet ranges from skinny water skiffs to gleaming Gulf Stream-worthy sport fishing boats. Where there's a will to get out on the salt, there's a way along the Tar Heel coast. You might drift your boat down a quiet channel, letting live minnows bump, bump, bump the bottom for flounder. Or anchor up over a wreck or artificial reef and haul in tasty black sea bass, triggerfish, tilefish, and mahi-mahi. Or set your elbows atop a pier railing and drop a bottom rig beyond the breaking waves. No stress. Drink a beer. Crack a joke. Feel the tip of the rod thump and set the hook. Dinner. Ardent fly fishing anglers stalk redfish in the Spartina marshes. Using specialized skiffs that float in mere inches of water, one angler poles the boat silently through the green maze while the other stands on the bow, fly rod at the ready. When a redfish is spotted, nosing through the shallows, the angler must cast the fly with pinpoint precision. Called sight fishing, it's a hunting trip as much as a fishing venture. And don't forget the options afforded by the Intracoastal Waterway. Some 300 miles of the inland route run along North Carolina coast, offering some of the most accessible saltwater fishing around. Redfish, flounder, and speckled trout haunt dock pilings along the Intracoastal Waterway. On stretches close to inlets, even ocean fish like bluefish and Spanish mackerel can be caught in the Big Ditch. And there's nothing like a pinfish smackdown to stoke a child's love for saltwater fishing in North Carolina. It can be as easy as you want it to be. In fact, the most straightforward and in some ways most rewarding way of fishing the salt in North Carolina requires little more than a rod, a reel, and a bucket. Simply stand on the beach, the sound of breaking waves in your ears, casting bits of shrimp and squid, and whole sand fleas to the unseen denizens of the surf. Is it really that easy? Often, but not always, which is why they call it fishing. And the photo on this page is of a sunset on the marsh of the Cape Fear Estuary. And this is one of those shallow boats that can be in inches of water. One is using the pole to guide them along, and the other one is doing the fishing. I think this is the first picture I talked about, but that was from an aerial, maybe from a drone view. This is for a more close-up view. But the water, the colors of the sun reflecting on the water make it appear amber. It's beautiful. Big rock, big rewards. In early June, on the sprawling waterfront of Morehead City, scores of gleaming sport fishing boats returned to port after hours spent pursuing giant marlin, and the chance of a payout that tops $1 million. Part fishing tournament and part fundraiser, the Big Rock Blue Marlin Tournament brings throngs to the town's Big Rock Landing for the weigh-in of blue marlin, white marlin, sailfish, and other ocean-dwelling giants. But it's not all fish and games. The Big Rock Foundation has given more than $10 million to charities supporting everything from education to health care, community improvement to conservation. And while a champion pinfish won't make headlines at Big Rock, no one doubts that the smile it brings to a young angler is the biggest trophy in all of fishing. And that there's a little girl, and maybe with her grandfather, standing behind her, and she is proud as a peacock, holding up the little 5-inch pinfish that she caught. You got a big grin on her face. And there's also a picture here of the, I guess it's the winning boat with Sushi. And in 2023, the crew of Sushi won top prize in the 65th annual Big Rock Blue Marlin Tournament. And it looks like it was 484.5 pounds. That's a pretty big fish. All right, moving on here. The next part is called On the Hook. From here, the diamond-patterned Cape Lookout Lighthouse casts a long shadow and a welcome beam of light. From here, the old whalers and fishing families from the long-vanished Diamond City push their wooden boats into the surf. And from here, still today, the fish can come from anywhere, storming along beach and marsh, holding tight along the inlet rock jetty, and appearing in an instant and seemingly from out of nowhere to froth the ocean surface with their feeding frenzies. And the caption for the picture is, "Anglers weather the waves as the tide rises over the sandbars at Cape Lookout." And you've got six fisher people. Don't know that they're all men, but six fishing people. And they are all facing Cape Lookout, which is with its diamond, black and white diamonds. And the foreground, of course, is the water. They're on a sandbar. A famous fleet. History holds, no matter the winds or waves or shifting sands. Moored on the Hatteras Village waterfront, the trio of boats that compose the Albatross Fleet, the oldest charter fishing fleet in North Carolina, has held true to its roots. The first of three handcrafted juniper boats was built in 1937. It was followed by the Albatross II in 1948 and the Albatross III in 1952. With their round sterns and candy-striped outriggers, they're impossible to miss. With their heritage of ushering in North Carolina's history of charter fishing, they're impossible to forget. And their crews are still on the job, putting anglers within trolling distance of fish for the table and for the memory books. And there's an inset here. A year before the third and final boat joined the Albatross fleet in 1952, Ernol Foster brought in an 810-pound blue marlin, and that is one big fish. And we have a picture of the three Albatross boats, and they're striped outriggers, and they're backed into their berths, and behind them is a sort of a robin's egg blue weathered building. Point of Pride. There may be no finer place in the country to fish in the surf than at Hatteras Island's Cape Point. Out here, you're on the edge of everything. On the edge of the continent, the edge of terra firma, one foot on shifting sands and the other in the ocean. Destiny swims in the form of giant redfish of 40 pounds or more, slashing schools of chopper blues, striped bass on migrating runs, ravenous and strong. This is where the diehards fish, the windburned and the hardcore. Bring your big rods and your A-game to Cape Point. This is the big leagues. And the caption here, silhouetted against an amber sunrise at Cape Point, known for its drum fishing, surf anglers launch lures, hopes, and dreams toward the Atlantic. And it is definitely an amber sunrise. The water is reflecting that as well, and you see basically the silhouette of the fishermen who are there. Very dark picture, but it's backlit with amber color. It's beautiful. What a catch. The North Carolina coast elbows deep into the Atlantic Ocean, giving big game anglers a jump start on their journey to the Gulf Stream. There, cold currents from the north collide with warm waters from the south, creating a swirling smorgasbord of bait fish and the giants that hunt them. Mahi-mahi and wahoo, king mackerel and marlin, tilefish and tuna, barracuda and grouper. Out there, there are no horizons, only dreams, no boundaries, only endless possibilities. A sailfish leaping in the churning wake of a sport fishing boat out of Wanchees is a scene and a moment that etches itself in memory. And the angler is at the back of the boat, and he has got himself braced in. He's not in a chair, but he's standing, but he's got himself braced in against the back of the boat, pulling in this sailfish. For the next article, we'll go to the featured area, Roads and Routes, and this is called Miniatures in Motion. All aboard! A garden railway educates visitors about train safety while welcoming guest locomotives to get in on the fun. Neil Bromelow still remembers the thrill he got as a little boy watching his first Lionel toy train run countless laps around his family's Christmas tree. It's the same thrill he gets today as he watches G-scale model trains navigate the nearly 3,000 feet of tracks at the Gibsonville Garden Railroad, one of the town's most popular attractions. It's also the thrill he gets when other children and young-hearted grown-ups marvel at the electric trains as they travel through the layout's miniature community. Lots of things in motion, going in many directions at different speeds, is soothing and slightly hypnotic, said Bromelow, 77, who is president and board chairman of the nonprofit site. The memories of older visitors are activated by seeing our trains, and they recall their childhoods. And when you see the joy and animation of our younger visitors, you can't help but smile. According to Bromelow, the tracks can accommodate up to 22 trains at a time. Sometimes you'll see trains from his personal collection and those of other railway volunteers. Visitors are also invited to run their own tracks, so there's no telling what will be on the tracks on any given day. You might see an Amtrak passenger train, a freight locomotive, or a Thomas the Tank Engine, a favorite among many kids. Some buildings in the miniature town are arranged to represent Gibsonville in 1855, the year that the first train arrived at the Gibson Station Depot. Others represent the year 1922, when the municipality became less of a sleepy rural village and more of a vibrant town with a church, a school, a bank, and more. The layout also includes landmarks from other parts of the state, like Grandfather Mountain, Blowing Rock, and the Cape Hatteras Lighthouse. Most fittingly, the layout was built in close proximity to the Norfolk Southern Railway, and real trains pass by frequently. "We always stop and wave at the passing trains," Bromelow says, "and the engineers typically toot-toot right back." The Gibsonville Garden Railroad was created in 1996 by Bobby Summers, a retired freight conductor who owned a hobby store in town. He ran his trains several times a year, but not on a consistent schedule. That changed in 2016 when Bromelow bought the tracks from Summers and turned the miniature railroad into a nonprofit. The trains now run from 9 a.m. until noon every Saturday between April and November, weather permitting, and on other special occasions. The attraction draws as many as 7,000 visitors a year, and it's free, although there is a donation box to help pay for its upkeep. Bromelow points out that the railroad serves an important purpose. It's part of Operation Lifesaver, an education program designed to teach people how to stay safe around trains and tracks. Beyond that, though, it's just a fun, nostalgic way to spend a Saturday morning. "We're seeing a lot of young families come out, and little kids are just enthralled with it," Bromelow says. "It's mesmerizing for them to watch everything in motion at once. Eventually, Mom and Dad buy them their own choo-choo and caboose, and they're hooked." Well, there's our music. We've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.